and welcome to the 147th episode of Lake of Rage Pokemon Trading Card Game Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kevin Clemente, aka Mellow underscore Magikarp. I'm joined today by a very special temporary guest host. Joining us for the first time, we have the reigning, all right, take a deep breath before this, the reigning senior world champion, the reigning senior LAIC champion, and now, at the time of recording of less than a week ago, the reigning EUIC champion in seniors as well, the one and only Gabriel Fernandez. Gabriel, how you doing today?
Hi, guys. I'm doing well. Hopefully this will be a good podcast.
I'm hoping so as well. Your brother did a great job on the meta discussion for EUIC, and so I'm expecting, you know, you give me the same great knowledge that you've got in the game, right? What we're going to get into is the, of course, first time you've been on the podcast, we're going to get into those rapid strike questions. Then I want to talk about a little bit of your history as a player, because it really feels like a lot of people have slept on really both you and your brother a little bit as far as some of your accomplishments and things like that throughout all the years. So I want to get to know you a little bit better for that. And then we're going to talk about the run you had at LAIC with a deck that I don't think anyone really expected to do as well as it did in both Masters and Seniors. And that was, of course, for anyone who does not know, because you're not paying attention, a Ancient Box. But Ancient Box with the Koridon and the Fluttermane and, you know, all that little stuff. So we'll talk about that deck more in a little bit. But first, we're going to do the rapid strike questions. So you're going to have 60 seconds to answer as many as you can with no explanations. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Perfect.
Yep.
That's the attitude I want. All right. Question number one. Do you prefer spring or fall?
Fall.
What's your favorite breakfast food?
Cereal.
What was your favorite format to play?
Team up. I guess it ended on team up. The Pikachu and Zekrom.
I love that format. What's your favorite deck of all time?
Pikachu and Zekrom. I just played that song.
Who would be your starter Pokemon from any generation?
Squirtle.
What color sleeves do you use?
Black.
Do you prefer cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Juniper, sycamore, oak, rowan, or magnolia?
Juniper.
What's your favorite subject in school?
Math.
What was your favorite regional location to go to?
Charlotte.
And that is time. You did pretty well on there. I got to go back, though. As a fellow Pikarom enjoyer, what makes you love Pikachu and Zekrom as a deck?
I mean, so when I started playing the online tournament, I think it was at that format, and I just played it like so many times. That was the only deck I played, and I started to love it. Like, it was just so good. You could attack turn one with Coco Prism, the Thunder Mountain. Then it came like you had Jirachi, Stag Calls to get like Mellow and Guzma and Hollow, stuff like that.
Yeah, so that Tag Call engine from, like you said, that like early pandemic online era.
Yeah.
And I guess that's actually the perfect segue into the first thing I want to talk about, and that is your history as a player in the trading card game. So you didn't just start playing during the online era, although I think that's when many of us kind of recognize, like, oh, this kid is beating all of us. When did you start playing the Pokemon trading card game, and why did you start playing?
So I started playing like many years before the pandemic, but when we started to get really competitive, I think because in the juniors division when I started, I was getting some top 8, some top 4, but nothing like really good as a first place. And then the pandemic came, a lot of my friends just like stopped playing Pokemon, and me and my brother, we played like 3 tournaments every day. And then we just started getting good at Pokemon, and that's when it all happened.
Did you all play in all of the same tournaments against each other, or did you pick different tournaments on purpose?
I played a lot against my brother on online tournaments. I know a lot of people recognize my brother in online tournaments, and not many of you know me because I use different names. Like, I didn't use Gabriel Fernandez. I just used random names that I, like, I was a little kid, so.
Yeah. How did you do in some of those early tournaments? Like, were you doing incredibly well and like winning or top cutting a lot of those early, like the Limitless qualifiers, the Sunday Opens, the Hegsters, those like very first ones?
So the Sunday Open, I think I'm the person who most won the tournament. I believe I won like 5 times Sunday Open tournament. And in the early pandemic, I played with my brother on the same account. Mm-hmm. Like we just shared thoughts during the games. And then I started my own account. Then I did very well in the tournament, but like not getting first place. Some I got, but like not frequently like I'm doing right now on TCG.
And then once the online era was over, how did it feel transitioning into like playing with paper cards again? And did you feel like you had an advantage over the other? Was your first year back a seniors or a juniors?
So before the pandemic, I was a juniors. Mm-hmm. And then the year I got back, I was a seniors.
Okay.
So it's like that's when I got into seniors. But it was a São Paulo regionals and I got top 4. Like in that tournament, it already felt like the people who were beating me in juniors and transitioned it together with me, mm-hmm. two seniors, they're like behind me. After the pandemic, I was just getting better and they stopped playing. So I felt like I had an advantage.
You said had an advantage, and yet you're still winning tournaments now. So what do you think is leading to you doing so incredibly well in these last, and like I mentioned earlier, but Worlds, LAIC, and EUIC, and there's a regional championship in there as well in between all those. So what is making you still do so incredibly well?
I think like I did not practice a lot before the tournaments. Mm-hmm. Normally like just I think about my deck sometimes, but I'm not really focused about it. And then 2 days or 3 days before, I just like really get into the tournament and I start to like discuss things with my brother, mm-hmm. about the decks. And like we test it. And then from then we just like know how to play the matchups. And that's a big advantage because some people just get into a matchup and they're like, oh, how do I play that? They don't know how to play that matchup. And I feel like having that knowledge, just like it's very good to, when you get into the tournament, you know, like you get confidence, mm-hmm. to go in there and win your games.
So it sounds like then you collaborate with your brother a lot on decks and matchups and stuff like that. Yeah. And then do you like practice against each other like all the time, or is it just right before the tournament in those couple days?
Yeah. So I normally play a lot of live. Mm-hmm. I like just building my decks from there because I don't have to search the cards in my house. I just build it.
Yeah.
On TCG Live. But like the ancient box that I won UIC, mm-hmm. my brother came up with the idea. And then we tested. I was playing like Charizard. I was playing all those decks. And he was playing the ancient box. Mm-hmm. So that made me play the deck because I just kept losing to the ancient box. So he basically convinced me to play the deck during our tests.
Okay, so you were playing everything else in the format against your brother, and he was just beating you.
Yeah, he was just beating me.
So that convinced you Ancient Box was the best deck for EUIC. Was it purely your brother like just beating you, and then he's like, okay, here's the 60, go with it? Or did you kind of help like refine the list and make it a little bit better after deciding to play the deck with him?
So my brother played an online tournament with the Ancient Box. So there was our base list. We just kind of went from there. So in the matchups, we were like, oh, maybe we need this to make the matchup a little better. Maybe because like the Awakening Drum, the Prime Catcher, this is also a discussion. Roaring Moon X, Cobalion is something that we're like, I think with the Awakening Drum, our list is more like focused on getting those big knockouts in the late game because we actually knew how many ancient cards were in our deck. to get the knocker on a Charizard. So the Awakening Drum, it's like overall worse card than Prime Catcher, but just like the draw off on Iono, the Ancient card in your discard, I feel like that's just gotta be your assist back in the deck. And Ancient Box is like a very good deck, and our test is very well. But there are a few cards that, like, some people played Arts on.
Mm-hmm.
Some people played, like, less Ultra Balls. And we played two Super Rods because in the Charizard matchup, the Eevee kind of hurts.
Mm-hmm.
So if he gets one Super Rod, we still just win the matchup. If he goes, like, normally
mm-hmm.
with the second one, the Superior Energy Retrieval was a card that we did not use, like, one day before the tournament, we're not using the Superior Energy Retrieval. And then sometimes we saw, like, we were missing the knockouts because we didn't have anything to discard cards in our hand. And then we decided to add that and couldn't an energy. So it's just, like, the little things that just adds to the deck that probably made me win the UIC.
So one of the things that I know, and you already mentioned Awakening Drum a little bit, but I know because I've been asked this by a few Ancient Box players who are like, oh, look at my list and all that. I don't know anything about the deck. So you're the one that I'll refer to them. Awakening Drum, what did you ever want it to be Prime Catcher during the tournament? Or was it always like, no, drawing cards is so good, this is always better?
Honestly, I felt like without the penny, with my brother didn't play the penny in Masters, but I added that because I was a little bit afraid of Snorlax. That was my brother's only loss in day one. And I think there was not a single time that I just like, oh, I wish that was Prime Catcher. But maybe without the penny, because every time my opponent's just like Prime Catcher, Counter Catcher, Stall, and Sableye something, Greninja something in the bench, I was just penny attach and knockout. So no, the Ancient Drum is 100% better.
And then you mentioned the, like, the Counter Catcher, Stall, Sableye type plays. The thing that stands out to me, and I haven't played a ton of Ancient Box, so excuse my possibly kind of stupid questions. The Koridon seems like a terrible card. It has two retreat. Its damage cap is, you know, lower than the Roaring Moon. What makes the Koridon better than running something like a Screamtail, right? Who has a one retreat cost and you don't want to attack with it either, but it can attack for dark energies and stuff like that. So why is the Koridon the ancient Pokemon of choice here?
So I would not cut a Koridon for, like, we talked about Greytusk.
Mm-hmm.
It's good in the mirror match. We talked about Slitherwing a lot. That was the one card, but we were going to cut a Fluttermane, not a Koridon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Koridon, you're going to use it in the matchup. You're definitely going to attack with it, like, maybe one time, maybe more. But I think when I start Koridon, it's not like, oh, I need to retreat that for the Rowing Moon. Early game, I can just, like, set up my board. Maybe I'll just pass with it and just let it get knocked out so I can, like, explore, build my Rowing Moons in the bench. And early game, the Rowing Moon's not doing a ton of damage. I think Koridon is even better early game than Rowing Moon. So
mm-hmm.
It's just a great attacker. I would not cut a single Koridon from my list.
Another thing that stands out from the list, and this is because I've been playing so much of the Roaring Moon deck, there's no Dark Patch. So you have four Sadas and the four Pokégears to find it to power up your attackers, who all take two energies. Were you ever, like, missing attacks after, obviously ignore turn one, right? You're not going to donk too many people, but are you missing attacks constantly, like, after that, or was it always fine?
Honestly, Sada just, like, it was just too good. And for Pokégears, for Sada, like, I don't think attacking is a problem. Something that happened to me two times in UYC was that I only had a Rowing Moon with two energies,
mm-hmm.
had Rowing Moon in the bench, a Ninja, but the Rowing Moon I had in the bench had no energies. I already had damage on the Rowing Moon with energy. He would counter catcher, KO the one with the energies. So if I saw that, I still cannot attack. Like Dark Patch and Prime Catcher could solve it. But I still want those matchups. Like, I think it's fine to take a turn. It's not that big of a deal. And the list is like, there's no space. So my brother played the fourth Ultra Ball instead of the Penny, which is like a lot of people did not respect Ancient Box because they just thought it was like an inconsistent deck. So we had four Ultra Balls, but one card that I did miss was Heavy Ball. I think most games that you prize Greninja, you're not in a very good spot doing that. I feel like you just gotta scoop sometimes so you have time for game two and three. There was a time against Charizard, my only loss in the tournament was when I prized two Rolling Moons and my opponent Eevee my two Super Rods. So yeah, that was unfortunate. And I would have won if I had one more Rolling Moon, but it happens. And I would not add Dark Patch. I would not add Rolling Moon X. Like, I think before all those cards, it will be the Heavy Ball and the fourth Ultra Ball.
Okay, that sounds, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. Are you looking for sleeves? Of course you are. You're a Pokemon trading card game player like me. I recently got my hands on the Procyon Gaming dual spec sleeves, and I gotta say, I absolutely love them. I was actually kind of surprised by how much I liked them. So we've now partnered with the Champions Reserve to offer you 15% off of Procyon Gaming's new dual spec sleeves. And I'm saying, Mello, why would you want to pick these ones? Because I think first and foremost, they are indestructible. I had played with the Sentinels, they're old formula, and those things just did not ever get nicks on the corners or anything like that. And now I've used the dual specs, and I gotta say, they are also just the most indestructible sleeves that I have seen or used so far. After shuffling up dozens of games hands, they have zero bent corners. They are slightly larger than the Sentinels, so the cards fit in perfectly. And my absolute favorite, they come in boxes of 70, so you don't have a ton of extra sleeves. You have just enough if somehow one of them were to ever break. Although, boy, you got to be a rough shuffler to do that. So check out the championsreserve.com. Use code LAKE 15 for 15% off an order of Procyon Gaming dual spec sleeves. All right, let's get back to the show. I want to talk a little bit about some of those matchups and, of course, kind of the run of the tournament. So you mentioned Charizard as your only loss to the day. What was your record against Charizard on the day, and how do you normally play that matchup? Like, what are some tips you have for people against Charizard?
So every time I played against my brother, I was playing the Charizard. So like I played two row and Eevee, and my brother did beat me with those two. So into the tournament, I was feeling good against Zard, but I did lose to the only Charizard Pidgeot I faced, except in the finals. But I did win against a Bibarozard, which is probably a worse matchup, but they cannot find Turo and like they do not play Eevee, so it's okay. But I need to counter catcher the Pidgeot and the Rotom to win most times that matchup. And the only time I did lose to Zard was because they Eevee in the two Super Rods and I did prize the two Rolling Moons. So that was like a rare matchup. It's not gonna happen a lot of times. And like I said, I did have the win if I just had another Rolling Moon. And game two, I just bricked. I had nothing in my hand. So going into the finals against Charizard, I was not feeling very confident because of my only loss and also the attacks that Benny played. But I knew the matchup was okay. I lost against my brother, and we saw what happened in the finals. My deck just like got everything I needed in my hand, and it just went my way.
Did you practice the night before, like against Charizard, or were you just kind of like, I'll see what happens on Sunday?
When I got into top four, and the finals was gonna be Sunday,
Oh, that's
so
right.
I did not, yeah, so I did not knew I was gonna face. I did not know what I was gonna face in the finals. So There was only two matchups I could hit finals if I made it to. It was Arctina and Zard, because that was like the two. So Arctina against Zard, Arctina against Zard in the other side of the bracket.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I lost against Zard, and my tie was against Arctina. Mm-hmm. So like those were the two matchups that I did not win. But the two matchups are fine. Like, and what I hit in top eight was Tina. Mm-hmm. Yeah, lost box Tina. It's just a very favorable matchup for me. It's like almost an auto win. I started Flutter main both games. I did lose a game, but I got double prized because I flipped the fourth card in Pokestop.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But like, that game I lost because of the double prize, and the other two games, like, it was just very easy.
Mm-hmm.
Top four, I hit a loss box. They have a better matchup than Lost Tina against me because they have Iron Hands.
Mm-hmm.
And they can easily, like, Greninja, Sableye, and Tina always have to attack with double prizer. But I attacked it with Flutter main early game. Like, they cannot comfy. And I always bench a second one because of the iron bundle and attach just two capsules so they cannot Greninja it. Like, with the two Flutter mains, they cannot do anything. So it's a very favorable matchup for me.
So is that then how both of those, like, anyone who's playing against Lasso and Tina or Lost Box in general, which I assume you said Iron Hands, so it's got, what, Iron Hands, Roaring Moon?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that normally the strategy of put the Flutter mains in the active, and are you going to attack with the Flutter mains for the whole, not the whole game, but like that early part of the game?
Yeah, especially if I start with Flutter main, mm-hmm. I think that's just my go-to attacker in the early game, because he cannot attack with Cram. He has to get seven in the loss zone. He'll probably try to Prime Catcher or Counter Catcher or Rowing Moon, but then I think I'm just too ahead in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, early game, I can attach an energy to Flutter main. I do not even need to bench anything. I can just pass with the Flutter main because he cannot KO with Cram. So, like, I can just attach. Turn two, I can, like, bench everything, bench a second main, bench just Greninja so I can Sada. And then I just have a Rowing Moon with an energy ready to attack. So, from there, it's, like, a good prize trade for my deck.
Mm-hmm. So you said Tina's almost an auto win. So with the Flutter main in the active, are you not afraid of them using Abyss Seeking to just build their loss zone?
Both games, my opponent went call risk Abyss Seeking,
mm-hmm.
which is like, it's very good for them. That's what they need to do when they start Flutter main. But then I went attack with Coraidon, and I feel like if I get a attack in a Giratina and they still have six price,
mm-hmm.
I'm just very ahead in the game, because they cannot one hit KO with any single prize of their own. So mm-hmm. to KO me, they have to attack with a Tina. It's just like a very good prize trade for me. Like I said, it's two and against one. So
is that then one of the like main things that you like about the deck, is because you're all single prizers, you prize trade into every single deck really well?
Yeah, I think that's like, if the deck had a two prize card like the Rowing Moon, I think when I started with the Moon X, mm-hmm. it would like just be a loss for me, which that's also a thing to not include the Rowing Moon X in our list. The single prize decks are like, it's just very good. And Lost Box, which is supposed to be a single prize deck, but they attack with Rowing Moon X, they attack with Tina, the attack with Iron Hands, and my deck can one hit knockout with a single prize Pokemon. So that's the whole idea behind the deck.
That makes sense. Another question I have about the deck is, normally single prize decks are really slow and it's hard to actually finish three games in a best of three. Now, I know seniors tend to play faster than masters. Masters are really slow at playing the game, but are you able to finish three games with this deck?
Honestly, in Masters, in day one, so I saw my brothers, like, it almost every matchup, it was taking so much time.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so confident in my deck. I thought I wasn't gonna lose the game. So I was just like, yeah. Going into the tournament, I'm like, if I'm gonna lose a game, I know my matchups. I need to scoop early.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not gonna finish three long games. Like, and yeah, like most games I won was just 2-0, because the deck is good. Mm-hmm. Like, if you get the right matchups, you're not supposed to lose a game if you don't misplay. So yeah, that's what happened.
Okay, that makes sense. You said don't misplay. Do you think this is a difficult deck to pick up? Or was it one where you kind of like, after a few games, you're like, this is easy, or you're nodding your head, so I assume it's a hard deck to play, you would say?
Like, the Pokestop misplay on the top 8. Like, if you did that on Swiss, I would just scoop instantly
mm-hmm.
to have time for game 2 and 3. Because in top cut, we have more time, so it's like it's fine to play out the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know exactly how to explain it.
That's like, okay.
It's a difficult deck, but like it seems like an easy deck.
Mm-hmm.
That you're just gonna like, oh, I'm gonna explore, discard my ancient cards, and attack you. But you have to sequence it very well.
Mm-hmm.
You have Pokegears, you have Pokestop, you have like Earth and Vessel that can like get energies in your deck. But maybe there are cards that you don't want to draw that are in the bottom of the deck because of an Iono.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's the whole sequence behind it that if you're a good player, you're normally going to do well up in sequencing. But it's not an easy deck to pick up for a tournament, and you don't prepare yourself
mm-hmm.
with the deck, like, and you're just gonna know instantly how to play. So I would not recommend you like have no testing with the deck and just play in a major tournament. That's not something I would do.
Mm-hmm.
You need to prepare first.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So it's a deck where there's a lot to it, where you have to figure out, like, what am I actually doing? What do I need? Do I need a Sada? Do I want to discard Pokemon off of Pokestop? Or do I want to hit items and stuff like that?
Yeah, and yeah, I think you just said it. Like, and as a single price deck, you also, like, have more turns
mm-hmm.
to play the game. So it's, like, more turns where you can misplay as well.
Yeah.
Right? So you have to be very careful with your actions with the deck.
That makes a lot of sense. Another meta deck that I don't know if you faced any, but I think it'd be good to know how the matchup goes, is Qian Pao. So Qian Pao is a very popular deck, right? And it's probably going to stay popular. Did you play any? And how does the Qian Pao matchup normally go for this deck?
It's very favorable mm-hmm. for Ancient Box, because their only way to KO, it's like Giratina. Their only way to KO is with Qian Pao. They cannot like KO with backs. So, and Qian Pao has like low HP. It's a low HP 2 prize. It's not that difficult for us to KO it.
Mm-hmm.
And early game, if they like just start attacking, you can always just counter catch or KO something with Koraiden
mm-hmm.
and then build your cards and discard. So, and they also have Pokestop. Like you have, they have. So, normally, you're not going to break in that matchup because it's just like it's favorable. It's not an auto win because they could like Ninja twice, Iron Hands. It's tougher if they play Iono
because
mm-hmm. that could mess up like Iron Hands, Greninja, Prime Catcher. But if they do not have Iono, I think it's just like very favorable. Another thing that I tested against Qian Pao, I think Penny just like made the matchup a lot better. My opponent was always like, his auto win was Ninja, Iron Hands, sometimes KO of Qian Pao. And when they Ninja, I was just Penny, like, get the damaged Pokemon into my hand, attach, attack. Like, I just gained the prize card.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, like, Qian Pao is a favorable matchup, and Penny made it a lot better.
That makes sense. You think the Penny is like an incredibly good card, not just for stall, but for like that situation. Okay.
Exactly. Penny also, I won a lost box in Swiss, where, like I said, he needs to Greninja, Sableye, Iron Hands. That's their plan to win. And I just Penny Paw Pad and used Penny twice. And with four Pokégears, it's not that hard to get that combo. Against the Lost Tina as well, my opponent Prime Catcher Greninja, his only way to win was that I did not have any retreats and I just Penny to win the game. I would not cut Penny at all in this deck. It was just amazing card at UIC.
So one of the matchups you mentioned, Penny, was for, like, specifically, in addition to all the other good stuff, was stall. Did you play any stalls, and how do you normally go about that matchup? Because one Penny doesn't seem like it auto wins the matchup. It seems like you still have to play very well. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it is
Yeah.
that good.
I mean, depends on what version are you playing against. If it's just straight Snorlax or like Pidgeot, and some are not even playing Snorlax, like Kremaskole in top four.
Yeah, let's say Snorlax stall
So,
first, and then we'll go into the Pidgeot.
yeah. So the straight Snorlax, you have to put as many Fluttermanes in your bench as possible because Fluttermane, when they active, it stops Snorlax. So it's just attach retreat. And normally you'd go Fluttermane, Fluttermane, Fluttermane. If possible, if you can get the fourth one, it's just always good. And then like Rowymon, Rowymon, Coraidon. Right? And the Penny was if they Erica, like if I just start with Greninja in hand or like I Pokestop and then Mantine, I'll just wait till I draw my Pokemons. And then Penny the Greninja. Since Avery now has rotated, I'll just Penny the Greninja and then just bench all my Pokemons. And then, so Fluttermane has a one retreat cost. And I have four Sadas. I have energies. I have super rods and superior energy retrieval. I can also one hit KO Snorlax. I can boss their Rotom. And I have Paw Pad. So, like, if you draw well, it's definitely a good matchup against Blocklax. I did play against my brother. I was playing the Snorlax. And when he was able to put all the Fluttermanes down and his attackers, there was nothing I could do. The Pidgeot version is a little weird because the Fluttermane just gets bodied by Mawile. So, but normally they do not play Mantine in the Pidgeot version. But you have to be careful with them attacking you with like Radiant Zard. Some lists play Luxray Reversal for the Lugia matchup as well. So you cannot bench the Fluttermanes or Greninja. And if they do Erica you, you can just Penny when they Mawile. So just like try to start Rowymon. It doesn't matter if you start Coraidon, it's okay as well. And just like two, three attackers in play and just keep swinging.
That makes sense. So just go big, just start hitting stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the deck draw also. It's very consistent.
Hey, the Awakening Drum has to help with that drawing well, right? What's another big meta? Lugia. There we go. How does a Lugia matchup normally go? Because, they can do big damage, but so can you. You don't have that much HP. So how does you play against Lugia typically? And of course, did you hit any Lugias in the tournament?
I did not hit any Lugia, and Lugia was a deck that was like really unpopular in seniors. But my brother hit like so many Lugias, and he hit on stream on round one as well. But Lugia was a matchup that I tested, me playing the Ancient Box, and I won 3-0 the matchup. I think it's very favorable for us. Like, they tried to attack with Lugia early on because they did not have the big numbers on the discard pile. But I'll just counter catcher Coraidon and I'll get a prize card. If they bench second Lugia, you should not lose that. Like, that's really, really good if they bench the second Lugia or Lumineon. And also, Lugia is not a consistent deck. Like, they play 17 energies, which is also a reason I did not bring Lugia to UIC. Like, it's not a consistent deck. They're most matchups they're not able to get a turn two summoning star for two Archeops. Like,
true.
It's very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get a good setup early on, it's a favorable matchup for Ancient Box.
Okay. So it sounds like, as a whole, every matchup is generally pretty good. What would you say are your worst matchups for this deck? Outside of course, Bricking. That would be one of them.
Yeah, that's, like, probably the deck itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's my worst matchup. Because, like I said, most people did not respect Ancient Box because of the inconsistent. But me and my brother made a consistent list. I feel like every time I played with him, he was having like a good starting hand.
Mm-hmm.
And most matchups are favorable. That's why I brought the deck to UIC.
Makes sense.
I think the worst matchup, it's Zard with the Heroescape, the one I played in finals.
Mm-hmm.
If they get a good setup, get the Lost City early, Professor's Two Row, Eerie, the Heroescape involved late game, I think that's like the worst matchup for the deck. Future Hands, it's 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
So I think besides that version of Zard, I think Future Hands was our worst matchup. But since many people did not know how to play against Ancient Box, like a lot of people did not respect it. A lot of people did not play against in their testings. They did not think that it was a matchup they would face a lot, like Charizard. And our plan was to send up Fluttermane, hope they KO it with Mirrodin, like just bench two Iron Hands and three Iron Crowns, hope they KO it. If they do KO your Fluttermane, you just won the game. Because now they have five prize cards, I have six. I'm going to counter Catcher an Iron Crown. They have Dark Weakness, so I do not need a lot of Ancient in my discard. And then Iron Hands, two imp very much. They need three Iron Crowns and the Future Booster, I believe.
Yes.
That's four damage modifiers. And then they lose the Bastoon, which is like a part of a essential part of the deck. And if I get the KO in Iron Hands with the Future Booster, I feel like they just lost the game. And if they do KO the Fluttermane, you're just ahead on the prize trade. So, like, you don't need much. You just need to get the Ancient Pokemons on the discard or a counter catcher again or maybe a boss. Because your main focus are the Iron Crowns. You do not want to KO the hands unless it's to win the game. Because that's the way they KO our attackers with a capsule. And also, that's a big part of the matchup. Do not put your capsules in your discard pile. You want them at every Pokemon you have in play. Do not bench Fluttermane unless it's to put in the active. And one thing I tested against that was Penny on the Greninja. There was a play that, like, my only out, the out for my opponent win was like boss the Greninja. He was down every resource. He could not imp very much my Moon with Capsule, and I just Penny the Greninja, counter catcher the Iron Crown, so that was very nice as well.
That is a really good play, actually. You're kind of selling me on the Penny being a really good card. The Ancient Booster Capsules, what other matchups are these, like, really important for? Because I find myself, again, slightly different deck, but I find myself with, like, oh, why are there four of these? Like, they're just, like, so bad, but also so good at the same time. So, like, which matchups are you like, I have to attach them to my Pokemon? Or which matchups are you like, oh, I'm going to Ultra Ball these away or Superior them away or, you know, whatever you want to do with them?
Yeah. So, Charizard is a matchup that you cannot attach capsules unless you, like, just have nothing to discard it. Like, you just have everything, like, Ultra Balls and Superior Energy Retrievals in the discard. Because Lost Vacuum, the capsule, like, after you get a prize card, they do not matter against Zard. And if they Lost Vacuum it, it's one Ancient card that, instead of being your discard, is in your Lost Zone. And like I said, we counted the Ancients in our deck. So one card in Lost Zone could be the way you lose the game against the Charizard. Because If you price it too ancient, we played 29 ancient cards. If you have the Rowing Moon active and you have two ancient prize cards, you have 26 perfectly ancient cards in your discard pile. So it's this exact math to KO. And if you have the ancient capsule on the Lost Zone, that's not gonna KO the Charizard. But I would not cut a single one against Steepao, against Lost Box, Lost Tina. In the mirror match, they are very good early on, and the Corridons cannot KO your attacker with capsule. Lost Box, in general, they're just gonna try to Greninja, Sableye, Iron Hands, those stuff. So the capsule is just like 60 more HP, 60 more damage counters they'll need to put in your Pokemon. And sometimes you can just penny something to capsule. It's like,
okay,
it's a good card in your deck, but the worst matchup for it is the Charizard. You do not want to attach, but against every deck in the format, I think Future Hands, Lost Box, Chin Pao, you definitely want those.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And then, actually, what other meta matchups are there? I think you've gotten most of them. Let's say Arceus, because you did play, or you actually, no, you did, you tied against the Arceus, and you ended up not playing in the finals because you played Charizard. How does a generic Arceus, you know, whether it's Arceus Tina or maybe just anything else, but, you know, it's like a 280 HP Pokemon, sometimes Sharon's Care, sometimes not. How are you handling someone who's going to shove these three gigantic Pokemon at you when you do so little damage at the start of the game?
So because it's a good price trade for me, I do not need to, like, when hit KO in the early game, I can just, like, Fluttermane is good against Arceus if they just, like, go attach pass to an Arceus. And if you send a Fluttermane, maybe they'll try to V-Star. Yeah. With the Fluttermane in the active, that's something funny. But the Arctina I tied against, game one, I won very easily. I just, like, set up the Corridon inactive, four Rowing Moons in the bench, and the Greninja, and just, like, Sada every turn. The price trade is good, so you should win from then. And then game two, I Pokestop, and then I Mew two Pokestop, and my opponent was playing one Lost City. So when he lost CD, I just, like, had no outs for that. So that was how I lost. And there was 10 minutes remaining on the clock when I lost game two. So there was just no time left.
Okay, that makes sense. So generally a good matchup, except the when all of your stadiums are gone and there's a Lost City getting rid of your guys. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and also, just be careful with the Eevees, like, Eevee can hurt, and the judges, so you have to be careful with your resources, like, use the power pads, use the retrieval sometimes, just, like, prevent something from happening, and you just break.
Are there any other piece of advice you might have for Ancient Box? Now, this episode will be coming out after Orlando. For listeners, we're recording, you know, before Orlando Regionals, but are there any piece of advice that you currently have for Ancient Box, or is it really just you got to practice the deck?
So a lot of my friends were like, oh, I lost because I decked out, like, my opponent e-read my power pad. But that's what I always tell them, it's you gotta be able to manage your resources, because in this deck it's already a tough deck to play. And in the mirror match I faced on my winning end, I almost lost because he played Gray Tusk.
Yeah.
And I had like five cards in deck. So you gotta be careful with that, because sometimes you're just like gonna turbo out your deck. It's a fast deck in the late game with the Explorers, the Pokestop, the Greninja. Vessel can take out two cards as well off your deck. So you have to be careful. Always use your resources in the best time you can. The Power Pad, the Super Rods, they are very important cards in your deck, and you have to be careful with those.
That makes sense. That's definitely good advice, because I can see I could see you decking out very easily with this deck, with, you know, Explorers and Sada drawing a lot of cards every single turn.
Yeah.
Gabriel, congratulations again on the victory, and I assume we're going to see some more in the future, but do you have any shout outs, and where can the people find you if they would like to follow you for any of your Pokemon journey?
I want to shout out my brother, the Testin. He also came in a podcast with you. He was with Brent and James as well. So he talked about the before UIC meta, I guess. Like, he was talking about that. I want to shout out my friends who also tested with me this deck. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. It's Gabriel Fernandez.
Perfect. Myself, you can find me Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube at @Mellow_Magikarp. Follow the podcast, rate and review, all that good stuff. This has been another episode of the Lake of Rage podcast. We'll catch you all next week.
Are you looking for some good Pokemon gear? Well, be sure to check out doomed-gaming.com to get some Lake of Rage merch. We have stickers, hoodies, and t-shirts. And the best part is the logo looks like just a generic Gen 2 Pokemon logo, with the words Lake of Rage and the red Gyarados on it. I've been stopped a few times in public by people saying, hey, I like your Pokemon shirt. Johto was my favorite generation. So you can support the podcast and get some cool Pokemon merch at doomed-gaming.com and use code LAKE for 10% off your first order.